That'll do it. All right, my dears, come along in and let's regather ourselves for our second round with Randall Day. Bring your coffee cups, bring yourselves. All the groups that are still visiting, come on back in. And as you're coming back in, let me thank the yellow group for that superb spread of food that is good for the soul. Thank you very much. And, of course, ideas that are good for the heart and the mind. Next week, it will be the blue group who will bring us some more soul food. Now, just before we begin again with Randall, I'd like to turn the podium over for a moment to Charles Svensson from the First Press here, who has an announcement about a wonderful conference.
Thank you. I'm Charles Svensson, the interim pastor here, and I remind you of our Radical Kinship Conference with Kara Powell and Father Gregory Boyle. It starts this weekend, tomorrow night, Friday night with Father Boyle, Kara Powell on Saturday morning, then Father Boyle in the afternoon, and then Father Boyle will be preaching here at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. You are welcome to this. I'm going to put these registration forms on the communion table over here, and all are welcome. We're having a banner conference. Over 400 people are coming, so we're very excited about this weekend. We're even putting up a tent. It's like a revival tent here. It's a room.
Thank you, Charles. And I love that we're all invited to get in on it as well. Well, we know and love Father Boyle, and this is a marvelous opportunity for all of us. Well, Randall, we've kept talking about what you've been talking about all the way through intermission. Come on back. Let's see where we go from here. Thank you.
It might be good for reading that. Yeah. Thank you for everything in terms of setting up. So one question, which could be the global question, what I think I might do, I have just two slides here with questions on them, and then we can kind of circle back and say, and go any direction you want to go. But so the most general question is, out of everything in Chapter 3, what impacts your experience the most, sort of one thing? Like if there's one thing that kind of leapt off the page or out of the conversation so far, what would that be? And then this quote is related to these two questions on the bottom. When you can honor and receive your own moment of sadness or fullness as a gracious participation in the eternal sadness or fullness of God, you're beginning to recognize yourself as a participating member of this one universal body. You're moving from I to we. And then the questions, how have you experienced this participation in the sadness or fullness of God? And can you offer any thoughts, images, or emotions related to being a participating member of this one universal body? And so in both cases, you know, obviously this is all kind of cycling through our minds, but are there emotions? Are there images? What is the participation? What's the engagement? And then over here, you saw this quote go by earlier, I've never been separate from God, nor can I be, except in my mind. So what arises in your mind in hearing that, or in your emotions, or in your body? And then just because you do not have the right word for God does not mean you are not having the right experience. Any kind of authentic God experience will usually feel like love or suffering or both. It will connect you to full reality. So then the question, when has your faith life been more concerned with having the right word for God or having the right experience? So, various questions. Do you have a favorite? Out of all these questions, anybody want to launch in? Or would you rather, I mean, I don't know what's your normal, I realize you do a bunch of different things. Ask me any questions. Well, I was wondering if you wanted to do that. I mean, that was one thing I was thinking about. I mean, and some people, of course, and I'm usually one of them, don't like small groups that much. But anyhow, but sometimes these are a little easier to discuss in small groups. And all of... So maybe I'm done talking. I don't know. We'll find out. But... Well, one of them, let's see, let's take these, but you take one or the other, okay? And small groups, what would small groups be? What do you want to just four, or if there's not a natural four, do three, do five, you know, whatever. Do what? Turn to your partner. Twos, unless there's a natural three or something. Okay, got it. So why don't we do that for, what did you say? 5 minutes, 10 minutes? Okay, well, let's work with these two questions. And right. Well, it's... This is pleasant. This is a nice atmosphere. So here are the two questions. Let's work with these two, and then we'll flip back to the other ones for group conversation. So I've never been separate from God. What arises in your mind? And then this one on the bottom about authentic God experience will usually feel like love or suffering. And the question about right word for God. The question is, when has your faith life been more concerned with having the right word for God or, alternatively, having the right experience? So let's do time yourself, 5 minutes on each, and then we'll come back. Okay, so sometime recently the second timer expired, so that must have been two exactly 5 minute periods. Apparently you have to look at the timer after you set it. I don't know. So, I hope those were good conversations. I wish we could report out because I'd like to know what you were talking about. But I don't think we have time for that. Let's go back over here. And here's, out of everything in Chapter 3, what impacts your experience the most? Or, if you'd like to speak to this one, how have you experienced this process of sadness or fullness? Thoughts, images, emotions related to being a participating member of this one universal body. So in the way that you do it, come, that mic is ready for you. Come.
Your question itself was a grace for me. Ever since I was in high school and we were taught the four temperaments, I knew I was a melancholic. Mm. Here we do not have people presenting sadness as an experience of God. Mm. Thank you.
Yeah, well, and some of that I think is the way the institution sort of marketed God. You know, that if you become one of us, your life is going to be so much better. You know, when, like, again, common sense. Is it going to be really? You know, I mean, but you know, how many of us have felt kind of shoehorned into, oh, yeah, I'm great. Anyhow, please.
I had an experience going to a synagogue in the Czech Republic, and they had on all the walls at the entry and all through the synagogue the names of people who had been killed in the Holocaust. And to me, that was a wonderful, sad, but happy expression of God.
Yeah. 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 I mean, clearly sacred. Yeah. Please.
I'd like to digress from the questions. First, I want to thank you for your definition of an embracing atheism. Some of the people closest to me are proclaimed atheists and agnostics, and they're truly some of the most deeply spiritual people I know. And the way you articulated it in terms of the God outside of the church sometimes is bigger than the God inside of the church explains it all.
Yeah.
So thank you for clarifying that and being inclusive.
Yeah.
And the second thing I'm wondering if you could expand upon when you talked about pantheism and panentheism. I've understand what you then went on to talk about was en Christos, and wondering how they link together in terms of God in me versus I in Christ. And it almost, if you could expand upon that, that would be really helpful.
Yeah, so I think, especially the way Richard does it, but I think the way I understand it as well, is that that it's both and. You know, that God is in us. We are expressions of God. And then we are also in God. You know, that it's like some of the descriptions of the Trinity, that it's a dance, you know, that and that age-old philosophical question, you know, how do you distinguish the dancer from the dance? You know, how do you, you know, can you break those apart? And the answer is no, you really can't. You know, that there is a dancer, and there is a dance, you know, but you can't separate them. They're experientially joined, and so the bold thing though about panentheism is to say, when I'm looking at you, I am seeing God. I'm seeing the sacred, the holy, the divine. I'm seeing Christ, and the further step to say that identity comes from your life within Christ, and this is, I guess, the other part of it is to say that we are in Christ. You know, that we do tend to, both culturally and in terms of how the institutional church has done things, institutional religion generally, you know, has been very, you know, like, here's the role. It's you and you and you and you and you, not us, really. So we are in Christ. I think one of the ways that Richard talks about it, you know, in this combining two languages, but, you know, that our DNA, that's where our DNA, that's where it comes from. You know, it comes from God. It's an expression of God. And so, so in a sense, just from the standpoint of identity, we can't be separate from God, that we are always in God, and yet God is always in us. So it's a both and. And one runs into this repeatedly, I think, in experiencing the unitive mind or unitive consciousness. You know, that you can't just be one or the other. It always has to be both.
Or, just to put it succinctly, as Richard said, Christ, or God, is in all things and transcends all things.
Exactly. And okay. That's the difference between pantheism and panentheism.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
But I had two points.
Yes.
One of them was something that I had never thought of before. I remember years ago asking, I think, Paul Smith, well, how do you explain all these things in the Old Testament, you know? And he said, you've got to remember that these things are written down by people in, you know, 5,000 years ago or whatever. You've got to remember it was a different stage, a different mindset. So I've accepted that. that I just suddenly realized today when you were talking about Paul, that not only do we have to understand Paul, the mystic and the man, as a product of first century Judaism, etc., but also we are a product of 21st century culture, and we are looking at him through the eyes of individualism and feminism and the eyes of, oh, most of us, the substitutionary atonement theory.
Yeah.
So that was an eye-opener, so thank you. And then one other thing, and that is that you made the statement that consciousness has been evolving for, I think you said hundreds or thousands of years. You said thousands of years. And I want to give you a little spark of thought, and that is that consciousness has been evolving since 14.7 billion years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Since the first spark.
Yep.
Because first there was light, and then the light got denser and started to become particles.
Mm-hmm.
And then those particles began to organize and became atoms. And then those atoms became organized and became molecules. And then the molecules became substances, like rocks or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then life formed. And at first it was just self-replicating. And then it becomes more and more conscious. And what is the point? What is consciousness? Well, first of all of it is
mm-hmm.
consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And consciousness, I think, is energy with intention.
What is
intention? An intention, what is the intention? It's another word for it is the word, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But what is the intention? The intention is to be, to create, and to connect in ever
yeah.
and ever greater connections until finally everything is resonating and it's one universal purr.
Yep, yep.
So we've been evolving for a long time.
Yeah. And Helen, my cat, would love to hear that it's a universal purr. And I love that, too. But, I really appreciate that word. And Richard very much uses that age, that 14... Yeah, like, how can we even conceive of that? But anyhow, and he especially uses it in context to people who are sort of like bibliolaters, you know, that as if God started speaking around the time that the printing press was invented, you know, and so, you know, Richard is saying God has been speaking. So going back to your word, in all of that is, and what is it with it? Energy with intention, energy with intention. All of that, and it is word. It is, and it's not word like, oh, they're talking about Jesus again. It's energy with intention. Yeah. So, anyhow.
So, paraphrasing something I heard in your presentation,
uh-huh.
If you want to speak to a mystic today, you need to talk to a scientist. Thank you, Jan.
Yeah. No, exactly. And if you want... One fun listen. We're kind of at the end of our time, but let me just throw out a couple things really quick. Come. You're already standing up. But as you're coming, two listens. I'm sure a bunch of you listen to On Being, right? Krista Tippett. So Krista Tippett is, she started out in NPR and Pacifica and so on and so forth. But one great way to get a hold of her is just through her website. It's onbeing.org, onbeing.org. She's been going for a long time. At one point it was just a radio show on NPR. And way, way, way back, it was called Speaking of Faith, but that was dropped, and On Being came. But she's exploring the great questions of meaning. That's the whole idea of the program. And but from her, and there's an app, so you can listen to the podcast on an app. Online on the website, she has the unproduced recording of the interview, which is fascinating. You know, because it's like before the outtakes, you know, so it's like an hour and a half long. The show itself is produced down to like 50 minutes or 45 minutes. But the unproduced shows are really, really interesting. She has a transcript of both of those, and then there's usually extra things from whoever. She's one of the only people who really interviews, and it's mostly when she's going to this questions of meaning, she's talking to mathematicians, she's talking to physicists, she's talking to poets. There's a great interview on there of, it's one of Mary Oliver's, maybe her last interview, is on there, and you can hear her smoking through the whole thing. You know, it's really beautiful. But there are great things there. Anyhow, so on Being, there's a show, she interviews the Harvard cosmologist Lisa Randall. So my first name is a last name. And so it's Lisa Randall, and she's talking, her particular area is what's commonly called dark matter. And her contention is, if it was dark, we could see it. It's invisible matter. But the way she speaks about it, and that it's, of course it's not, let her talk about it, but, you know, they're starting to be able to figure out, like, how much of this other matter there is. And she said, of all reality that we can measure or perceive in any way that we can perceive it, electron microscopes and so on, that's 15% of reality. And the rest of it is 85% of reality. And it's invisible, and it's flowing through us, even as we sit here. You know, so anyhow, Lisa Randall on Being, but any number of other things are great on Being. And then the other thing is there's a podcast related to this book that you can subscribe to on iTunes or any of the podcast stores. But it's called Another Name for Everything, which was going to be the title of this book, but didn't end up being the title of the book. But the podcast is called Another Name for Everything. But it's Richard speaking with two of the staff members from the Center for Action and Contemplation in Albuquerque. And it's interesting because, as you have seen, he writes very carefully and you know, really thinks things through and tries to present things in ways that are going to be super helpful. When he's just talking, it's like, Richard, what do you really think about this? And then you hear what he's really thinking about it. So I think we are at the end of our time. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going way back to the beginning where Dawn was talking about being the melancholic.
Uh-huh.
And I don't see anything wrong with that. I think it's through our melancholy and our sadness, at least it's been my experience, that I am closer to God.
Absolutely.
I've never learned very much from being happy. Much as I enjoy it, where I learn is where
yep.
there's been some blow that has made me stop. I'm thinking in particular, when my husband first had his illness, which eventually he died from, but he was rushed to the hospital with a triage to save his life. It was touch and go. And I was sitting in the waiting room, and I began to wonder, why aren't you praying? And I felt this warm glow around me. There were no words. But I translated it later. I could feel the words. The words came to me. These are my words, but
mm-hmm.
God's intention was, I don't need you to call on me. I will come anyway.
Right.
I do not need your words. I do not want your words. I want your silence.
Mm.
And that has been a lesson to me
right.
ever
and
since.
And your presence is
don't
a prayer.
Worry about what you say in your
exactly.
prayers. It doesn't matter what
yeah.
you say.
Yeah, God's doing it anyhow.
Yep.
So, yeah, good last word. So, thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
Randall, we can't thank you enough for a rich and wonderful morning. We'll go home thinking about all of these things. And next week, we look forward to Elizabeth Molitark, who will be with us. She is the rector of Trinity Church, and she will explore Original Goodness, Chapter 4. See you next week for another riveting morning. Bye-bye.